From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Hi, I'm Margaret Roach, welcoming you to this week's Harvest of Horticultural How-To and Woo-Woo. February's winding down, but I'm going to hold off on the full March garden chores until next week's show, which airs March 4th. Meantime, though, I do want to tell you, and frankly, this is more of a note to self, to Margaret, to get a head start on a couple of them. So I don't want to wait until March 4th for a couple of them. And those are ordering certain of the most time-sensitive plants, the ones that go in the ground first when spring allows us to. And see, I'm already thinking about spring here as February winds down here in the Northeast. And also getting ready for those early arrivals. In a minute, we're going to meet my guest today, who's Catherine Tracy of Avant Gardens Retail and Mail Order Nursery in Massachusetts. And Catherine and I are going to talk about why you might want to think about collecting some succulents, both hardy and non-hardy ones, to make into gorgeous container garden designs and even succulent wreaths this year in your garden, maybe for something new and gorgeous. But first, just briefly, those extra early March chores. So as I said, with both your ordering from the plant catalogs and so forth, and with any preparation in the garden that actually becomes possible, and we say sort of, quote, as soon as the ground can be worked. So as soon as the soil sort of says, it's okay, you could come out and prep this bed. And for me, I have raised beds in my vegetable garden. So I'm able to really work those earlier than the surrounding soil. So as soon as the soil in those beds or in your own beds in the ground says it's okay, the soil can be worked, you're really going to want to put your emphasis on the spots where extra early stuff goes. So, for instance, on my list would be if I could cultivate a row in the next few weeks in preparation for planting, I'd cultivate the row where I plan to put spinach or peas. I'm not going to try to clean up the whole garden or fix everything up right away because, of course, we can't do everything at once, even in our crazy multitasking world. And so I'm going to focus my attention. I'm also going to focus my last ordering here from catalogs and my prep on areas for things that are that come bare root from the nurseries. And so, you know, the classics are asparagus, raspberries, strawberries, rhubarb. Some of those would come to you when the weather's still kind of cool. And if you don't have the row ready, that can be kind of a drag. You know, there they are sitting in the garage and you're in a panic and you haven't prepped the ground. So if there's an opportunity and you have those crops in mind to plant this year, get that area prepared as soon as the soil can be worked. Ditto if you've ordered seed potatoes and onion seedlings. Those are things that are going to go in the ground early or relatively early as well. So do your prep in order of urgency. And so I'm letting you off the hook this week, as I said, with just this very short to-do list. More next time, because I want to get right to talking to Catherine. So the backstory on how I met Catherine Tracy is that my keenest gardening friends, and these are really, really discerning people who you can't get excited about almost anything anymore because they've grown so many plants. I was noticing they were making this annual pilgrimage across Massachusetts, hours away from where they live, to this place called Dartmouth, Mass. Not to be confused with a college in New Hampshire, but maybe an hour or less than an hour from Newport or Providence, Rhode Island. And they'd come back with like their cars full of this amazing stuff and telling me, oh, there were so many great things and you should have come with us. Well, eventually I said I had to reach out, and so I called Catherine and Chris Tracy, the owners of Avant Gardens. They've been collecting plants since the 1980s and started the nursery. Catherine confessed to me the other day, she said, quote, when our hobby really got out of control. So that's what they had to do. They collected so many plants, they had to open a nursery 25 years ago. So welcome, Catherine. It is really nice to have you to come talk about succulents, one of my favorite kinds of plants.
Thank you, Margaret.
So now I've told the history, and I've told that you were a binge plant collector from an early age.
We want to grow everything at least once.
I bet you're on your second and third time around with some things,
absolutely.
As I am. Yeah. So at Avant Gardens, I know the nursery industry in general often favors things that will shape up and bloom its head off, like in a plastic pot during peak garden center shopping weeks. You know, oh, the bigger the flowers on a smaller plant, the better. Like, that's kind of what a lot of the traditional garden center thinking is. But I suspect that's not how you choose things for Avant Gardens. Like, how does a plant make your list? What do you look for?
Well, I mean, we just devour all the literature that's out there. We're on the internet constantly searching for new plants. We've been doing this for a while, so less and less is really, really new. But we're more interested in the plants and how they're going to perform in the garden. And we're really not thinking about what's going to look good in a pot in April and May. And fortunately for mail order, people aren't buying the plant because they're seeing it in front of them. They're thinking about the plants that they need in their garden, perhaps blooming later in the season. And when you're shopping in the spring, of course, you gravitate towards what's in bloom.
Right.
The fall bloomers get bypassed, and so we often have them sitting around the nursery.
I always say to people, if you're going to shop in April and May, and when this is in the Northeast, it would be earlier in more southerly locations, obviously, and a little later in more northerly. But if you're going to shop at that peak time when everything pretty and floriferous is out front, you know, assaulting you when you get out of your car and you can't resist it, go look behind the greenhouses. Go to the back aisle where everything's tucked away, because that's where the stuff that's going to give you February bloomers and October performers are going to be hidden, because they're not looking good right then. Do you look for flowers? Do you look for, I mean, what's the, is there something that you would say? I mean, I'm more of a foliage person, and I suspect you may be too, because that's, to me, the plants that look best the longest time in the garden.
Certainly. And we've noticed that our selection has really refined itself over recent years to the plants that are looking good most of the season. Because mm-hmm. a plant that's not in bloom in the spring, perhaps it doesn't have a spring bloom, but has really nice foliage in the spring, that's going to attract attention.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, plants that are selected for their foliage perform well in the garden all season long. So that's definitely criteria.
Probably how you got to succulents then, because I can't think of a plant that, well, it has not just, they are foliage, generally speaking.
It.
I mean,
that's
most
it.
Of the time what they are is foliage, and albeit succulent foliage, and they sort of always look, and they're sculptural as well.
The textures, the forms, exactly. They're living sculptures. And they look the same pretty much throughout the year. And a lot of them are fall bloomers and winter bloomers. So then if you, and actually some of them have very charming flowers, but really that's not why we're selecting, and you're not kind of composing your container gardens, or if you live in Southern California, your outdoor gardens based on the flowers. You're selecting the plants and grouping them because of their forms and their textures and all the shades. I mean, they blend so well together. I mean, it's really a mix and match kind of group of plants.
So speaking of them, I mean, I had a laugh. I looked at your website homepage, and the headline, a big letter said, succulents, succulents, succulents. And then there were lots of pictures of, very different from my garden, where a lot of them are in the ground, and occasionally I use them in pots, but the pictures on your homepage were really about ideas for using them in containers, and you were using a lot of succulents that are not hardy in our northern climates. How did that all begin? Like, how did you end up with some of these non-hardy succulents and so forth, or how did you get into succulents in the first place?
I was trying to think of the answer to that question, you know, because I figured you'd be asking. And, I mean, there's always the oddities, like Stapelia, that has this wonderful starfish flower. I remember that being an early succulent that we got our hands on. And it has a flower that has a really horrid odor.
I was going to say I have a Victorian, actually earlier than Victorian, I'm sorry, I have a very early print on my wall in my dining room of all the places to put a funky smelling, a picture of a funky smelling. It's fetid, yes? They describe in the early books, they describe Stapelia as the flower is smelling like rotten meat.
Exactly. It does.
So the answer to your question is you got into succulents because you smelled the rotten meat smell of Stapelia. Okay, good. You're kookier than I thought.
It's the curiosity factor.
Right.
I mean,
the plant
is odd looking. It has an amazing flower. And then you have to stick your nose in it because you suspect it's not going to smell good. And then you pull back a little bit repulsed and go, oh, but... there's that plant. That was also the late-blooming cereus, the epiphyllums. I mean, these were some of the first succulents that we tried because of their exotics. Now, that's one perhaps that you're growing for the flowers and not for the foliage because it is sort of an ungainly type of plant.
And it's at the other end of the smell spectrum, if there can be a smell.
That's
very, very perfumey, fragrant. I mean, it's fragrant in what people would think is a nice way, yes.
Yeah, and the drama that's involved with it opening late in the evening and staying open only till morning. So you have to kind of keep your eye on the bud to see is tonight going to be the night that it's going to pop open for you.
You have to plan your outside. Right, and you call all your friends, your crazy garden friends, and say, "It's tonight. Come over. Potluck tonight.
Let's drink to this."
Right, exactly. So those oddities brought you into the world of succulents, and then I think you told me when we spoke the other day. Did you have someone in your family was in the Southwest, maybe, or in San Diego?
That's more recent.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Our oldest son is out in the San Diego area, and we went out to visit him for the first time 3 years ago. And I hadn't been in that part of the country for so long. And at the time, well, now I'm really into plants. And this was 30 years ago when I was last out there, and I guess I wasn't paying as much attention to the succulents back then. But how humbling it was to see succulents growing in outdoors where they're hardy and they grow to large proportions. And the aeoniums, which we grow in little pots, are shrubs. And, of course, the time that we get to go out to that part of the country is in winter when many of the succulents are in bloom.
Right.
So I was just enchanted at this whole other world of plants that we northerners are not really exposed to except maybe in the miniature forms that we see them in little pots in nurseries.
Right. So you decided... the climate be damned, no worry. I'm going to bring them back to from your various adventures. I'm going to bring them back, or I'm going to order them and grow them in New England. And is that where it began with, like, the pots, the containers?
Actually, probably back early, like around 2003 or 2004, I was in the Bay Area out searching for plants one fall day. And I saw this fabulous echeveria that had that sort of encrusted eruption of texture on its foliage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the perfectly matched pot that had a texture that just sort of mimicked the eruptions on that leaf. And it was just stunning. It was so, so different to look at. And so at that point, I really wanted to beef up the collection that, you know, we had odds and ends. We had little echeverias and different sedums in pots that we grouped together, mixing the hardy and the tender ones together. But then I was on this quest for the more unusual forms, which are hard to find here on the East Coast. We see some of the basics, but we don't get to see too many of the real exotics that they have out there. And I think, you know, one reason why we didn't push it too much earlier was there seemed to be the New England gardeners seemed to not be comfortable with succulents. I would hear comments, oh, they're interesting, but they look so southwestern.
Right, deserty,
like
right?
They belong
right,
here.
Right, right.
And
right.
I kind of thought that, but then, you know, I mean, I could understand what they were saying, but, you know, still, here are plants that you can put out in a hot, sunny area and not have to worry about watering them for most of the summer.
Right, which is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It really is. And the combinations just seem to work so easily together. I mean, it seems like any grouping seems to work well. Though I do try to give people some pointers when they're mixing their containers.
So let's do that. Let's pretend we're making a container together. And what are the pointers? Because there are hardy and there are non-hardy ones, and there's all different forms and structures. And so what are some of the guidelines from your expertise that you've developed at Avant Gardens?
Well, first consider the pot that you're putting your succulents in, because then that kind of helps you choose what plants are going to look best.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about succulents is they don't need a lot of soil, you know, to hold moisture. You can plant them in shallow pots. They all like the same basic growing conditions of a very well-drained, gritty soil. And you can mix the hardy plants with the tender ones, although the tender ones tend to be the showier ones, the mm-hmm. ones that come in more exotic colors.
So when you say gritty soil, I go to the garden center and I get... What am I getting? I'm getting, am I adding some, like, grit to, like, that I would use for poultry or something? Am I adding grit to a potting soil that I might buy commercially, or is there something special I'm trying to find on the label?
Some garden centers will sell a cactus succulent mix.
Okay.
But we, you know, they're not in every garden center, and you can easily mix your own. You can use your own compost, for example, but you want to cut it at least 50-50 with some sand and chicken grit if you have access to that,
okay.
or a small sharp stone just to get this really gravelly soil with air pockets in it.
Oh, good. Okay, that's good for me to know. I'm taking notes because that's one of the things I didn't know, cut the compost 50% with the sand and grit. Okay, I was underdoing it. I wasn't putting enough sand and grit.
They can almost grow in pure sand.
Okay.
Slowly,
all right, good.
But they will. I mean, we root them in a sandy mix in, well, basically sand and perlite. And sometimes the succulents that live in that sandy perlite mix look better than the ones that are in the potting soil.
Okay.
But because we are a nursery and we ship, we have to use a soilless mix. So we use a very barky mix,
right,
that would be used for perennials, which is more quickly draining, doesn't have as much peat moss in it.
Right, and you're right. So people don't know what a bark-based mix is. It's more ground bark than it is peat.
Exactly.
So it's a little heavier mix. That's what I use also. Mm-hmm. I use like a Fafard or 52
yes,
mix or something
the
like that.
Yes, 52.
Right.
And then
so.
We cut that with sand, and we use perlite, which is not something that people, you know, feel all that comfortable using because it has its issues, but it lightens the mix, and because we ship,
okay,
we need to have something that isn't weighing a whole lot, you know, that isn't really, really heavy.
Right. So this is a really sharp draining. If I'm putting these succulents and I'm able to mix hardy with non-hardy, and I can just do it visually, but I pick a pot, and it can be a shallow pot if I want. I even saw you had some that looked like kind of bird baths and, like, you know, almost like they were on a pedestal, and a shallow bowl on a pedestal kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, if you're using a container, you should make sure it has some drainage holes.
Mm-hmm.
And so a bird bath, you know, although they're usually somewhat porous, if they're cement, it tends to be... there's a way that you can drill holes into them so that if we do tend to have a series of rainy weeks in the summer,
right, that they drain well.
Mm-hmm. That they drain. You can use very traditional pots, too. I mean, at first, you know, I thought, oh, I need to use something modern and architectural, and I did it first. And then I started using the more traditional pots, you know, something of cast stone on pedestals.
Right,
and,
right.
And it's really fun. You just kind of play with it and make sure you have... Another point that I wanted to make is when you're grouping plants together, just like in the garden, you don't want to pick all the same texture. You want to have the different forms. And that theory that somebody came up with for container gardening.
I know what you're going to say.
The thriller, filler, spiller.
Thriller, spiller, filler. And if people don't know what that means, the thrill is the upright element, the spike, and the spiller is the thing that cascades and breaks the edge of the pot, so it softens the edge of the pot, and the filler is the in-between thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't go wrong, and it's easy to remember because they all rhyme.
Right.
And there's some fabulous succulents that will do that. The one challenge with the succulents is to find the plants that are going to be tall, that are going to give you that upward thrust, because a lot of them tend to be low and spreading.
So that's why the aeoniums are so – is that one of the ones that you use where they're –
That gives you some height. And,
right.
And the thing to remember is that they winter over very easily indoors on a sunny windowsill.
So hardy and non-hardy ones? So if I've mixed them, I've put, you know, a sedum that I could have grown in the ground with an aeonium that I couldn't have, I can put them together in my sunny windowsill? Or I should segregate them?
Well, the little creeping ones, yes. The, if you were to use some of our hardy succulents that get tall, like Sedum Autumn Joy.
Right.
They tend to want to go through a dormant period in the wintertime. So, I mean, you can bring them in, and they I actually have never actually brought an ensemble in that had one of those and carried it through the winter. But I'm sure you could. But what we do is we usually plant them up in big pots, and moving them in and out of the greenhouse is a chore. Besides the fact that each year they basically need to get repotted. So if we have a huge pot with a dozen or more succulents in it, at the end of the season, of course, it's filled in gloriously, and it's heartbreaking, but we have to break them down. We have to dig them all out and take them apart.
I was afraid you were going to say that, but I suspected as much.
It sounds like, oh, but it was so beautiful. But on the other hand, as winter goes on, the plants are going to stretch a bit indoors.
Right.
That's just going to happen.
Right.
And they're going to need to get cut back hard, and things are going to get spread, and they basically do need to get repotted in the spring in some fresh soil, because nothing sends off the plant to a good start like giving them some fresh soil to take root into, even if it is this very lean, sharp draining mix that we use for succulents.
So those are some ideas with the pots. So I saw on your website also these succulent wreaths. And, of course, I've seen them elsewhere, but I never really tackled one myself. And it looks like you're doing them yourselves, and I assume you have customers who are doing them from plants that you're selling them. What is the sort of armature? What's happening with those, if we can quickly kind of go? How does a succulent wreath come together?
Well, I made one years ago, and I used like a wire form lined with sphagnum and filled it with soil.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a long, long time ago. And it took a tremendous amount of cuttings. And I thought, oh, well, there's no profit in this. I'm just making these for myself. And then I was thinking about, of course, succulents have become very popular in the home decor magazines now. You see them everywhere.
Right.
And last year I thought, I'm going to try using one of these sphagnum wreath forms that are pre-made. And basically, these are these forms that is just sphagnum moss bound together over a wire frame. They actually have a little hook on the back so that you can hang them.
Right.
And you soak this sphagnum wreath form in water and get it nice and wet, and then poke holes in it and insert your cuttings.
Little pieces of your succulents.
Mm-hmm. Little pieces of your succulents. And within a few weeks, they root. And you don't want to fertilize them until the plants have actually rooted, but then I would use like a seaweed fish emulsion fertilizer to give them something to just to kick in and freshen up a little bit as the season goes on. But since they're not heavy feeders, they don't need a lot, especially when we're growing them so artificially like that in a wreath form. This is really an easy, easy solution. And you can buy these pre-made sphagnum wreath forms now at floral supply places. There's wholesale places on the internet retail places on the internet.
Oh, good thing
you
to look up. Now, I assume if we're going to hang it like on a door or something, I'm going to need to turn it up and down and up and down so that it grows evenly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to on a tabletop.
Yeah, because they're going to reach for the light. The plants are going to try to grow upwards. So, I would say, you know, you could give it 2 or 3 weeks in a spot, but if you let it go much longer than that without
give it a turn.
relocating it, it's going to start losing its form.
I'm going to I have to interrupt you because we're running out of time. I can't believe it. This always happens, Catherine, but I'm going to want to ask you to come back and talk more about some of the incredible plants at Avant Gardens, which is, by the way, it's www.avantgardensne, like New England or Northeast.com. And I'm going to put on awaytogarden.com this week. There'll be the story, which will have lots of links of the exact way to do this with photographs of the steps and so forth that you're going to help me with, and we're going to get that together for our listeners so that they can go to awaytogarden.com and get all the backup. But I'm so glad to speak to you today. Thank you for joining me.
It's been my pleasure.
Oh, good. And you can always find me on awaytogarden.com, of course, and also on facebook.com/awaytogarden, where we have a great group. And I'll talk to you all next week.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.